going on? This is Toki and Noah, and you're listening to Chicago Bullseye.
Give it all you got, take your very best shot, and may the best team win. The time is now, the name of the game is action. They're on the floor, and they're ready to score, so let the game begin.
All right. Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Chicago Bullseye. We have the great Keith France on. Keith, how you doing, brother?
Chilling like a villain.
So, lots of news that we have not yet discussed. Let's get into the topic at hand, which is the signing of Jabari Parker. Took a lot of people by surprise. I woke up this morning to just general outrage on my Twitter line here at Bulls Central, and you know, I was kind of a little bit surprised at the general I'd say tenor of the reaction, just because it's a 1 year deal in essence, and I have a general rule in life that I don't get upset over 1 year deals. What say you about the deal and you know how everything went down?
I say the 1 year definitely saves it. As you said, it's hard to lose sleep over it. But it doesn't really make Jabari an asset. If it's a short-term deal and he does good, somebody would want long-term control. So it's really exactly at base value what it is, a trial run, slightly overpaid to kind of scare Milwaukee out of a potential match and ultimately getting them to rescind his qualifying offer, which actually allowed the Bulls to do the 1+1 deal. Otherwise, it would have had to be 2 years guaranteed, which would have given fans a reason to have some outrage.
Well, is that true, though? I've heard conflicting things on that. The second year does not have to be guaranteed. It would still have to be a two-year deal. But it would be a non-guaranteed in year two on an unrestricted free agent deal. Am I wrong?
Correct. What it's kind of weird how it's worded. It can be a non-guaranteed deal in the second year, likely still owe them some form of money. But there cannot be a team option, which we got by them rescinding the qualifying offer.
So it's actually better for us.
Yes, that's much better for us. That means that with the team option, if we choose not to bring him back, it costs us nothing against our cap. If it was just the second year, non-guaranteed, he likely would have had a $3 million buyout similar to a Sheik has next year.
Gotcha. So, again, that's what I don't understand. So Let's take a step back. I think most people were more excited about the potential of us taking on Carmelo Anthony the day before and not taking him on as a player, as a salary dump. And in that deal, allegedly or supposedly, there was discussions of a number one pick. Now, I never believed that was anywhere remotely true. You kind of heard varying versions of the agreement where we would send Felicio. And anyone who doesn't understand why, I mean, it's clear why. Oklahoma City has about $100 million tax bill that they need to get fixed, or else they're going to be in dire straits. So that's why they would be make that move. And I would counter number one. I don't think it's realistic. I don't think those deals anymore where teams are going to give up number one picks unprotected, I don't think they exist anymore. I don't think they're there. Even this deal with New Jersey, we'll go into that in a second specifically, but that was top 12 protected for next year in a draft that's not supposed to be very good. So if you take a step back and ask yourself, what would you rather have? Let's say you do get a team to bite, and you do ruin all your cap space by taking on some bum for a year, and in return they'll give you an asset. That asset is a mid-round to late first-round pick. What are the odds that that player is going to be better than Jabari Parker, even with two ACL injuries?
Well, you'd have control over that player on a rookie contract is the argument at hand. You're paying Jabari Parker $20 million this year, and if he succeeds, obviously the player option gives the Bulls the opportunity to give him a extension that they agree upon long term. But that pick, say in the Oklahoma City situation, if they sent us a first back and took on Felicio, which I did also feel was unrealistic. I felt it was going to be one or the other, that we probably would have had to send a Sheik and probably Zipser's non-guarantee and stuff like that back to make it work to where we could actually get assets. But I would have been fine with just dumping Felicio in general, opening up two max slots for next year. Like I said, the argument at hand would be that it's a controlled contract. Jabari isn't controlled unless we want to pay him $20 million or more again next year.
Yeah, but if your goal is to get a difference maker, this is a fact. Jabari Parker at one time, he's 23 years old. Before that second ACL, in over 70 games, he was averaging 20 points per game. Again, you can count on basically two or three hands the amount of guys that can do that. You know, average 20-plus a game and be a scorer. That's why they get paid so well. And he was doing that in the NBA, a proven scorer who, yeah, he's got two ACLs, and no doubt that's a major issue. And that's why signing a one-year deal, in essence. You know, I mean, I feel the odds of Jabari Parker returning to form and being a very good scorer and valuable player in the NBA are greater than some 16th, 17th, 18th overall pick in round one. That deal that may or not, probably wasn't even available, that guy, no matter what, if you have control over him for 5 years, so what? If he's not going to be a difference maker, is he ever going to be anywhere as good as Jabari Parker? That's the question, you know? So I had zero problems with this deal as long as it was a one-year deal, and I'm still kind of, like, bewildered why people would. What are the reasons why? Why should we be upset? Because I know you kind of fell along those lines a little bit from what I've seen on your Twitter handle.
Because I don't feel that it fits our offensive scheme. I don't think Jabari Parker's a small forward. I think Zach LaVine and Jabari Parker, being ISO players and horrible negative defenders their whole entire career, is not going to work well. I actually feel this move could hurt the team more than it could help it. Somebody like Nwaba is versatile in every facet of the game, is a positive defender. Although he's undersized, he can actually guard small forwards. Jabari Parker can't even guard power forwards. Jabari Parker's net ratings at the small forward, 2014-15, -9.4. 2015-16, -29.7. 2016-17, -2.8. 2017-18, -16.7. So the Bulls asking Jabari Parker to do something he's never been able to do after tearing his ACL twice.
LeBron James had some awful advanced defensive statistics, too. I just find the defensive statistics, advanced defensive statistics, so incredibly dumb and stupid. I don't buy them. I don't. Like, Zach LaVine, I understand the argument. He's not a good defender. I still believe when push comes to shove in Q4, he's got all the tools to be a good defender. I don't feel like it's like an issue that these guys are so awful. I've never seen an advanced statistic that I really trust completely, because every time I look at him, I see a guy who's like in the top 10, and I'm like, man, I don't buy this.
Off the phone, go onto my page, go look at my poll, and vote on player A or player B. It's Bobby Portis and Jabari Parker. And Bobby Portis actually has better per 36 numbers, PER, defensive rating, just about everything outside of 1% at the free throw line. So that's why the move confuses me. If you were going to pay somebody $20 million for 1 year and attempts to, you know, speed up the rebuild and get into the playoffs, I don't think Jabari Parker was that guy. I think we waited too long, hoping on a cap dump, and Jabari's kind of just where we landed.
Well, I will say this. I think Jabari Parker can play the three. I've always felt every time I've watched him for the last 3 years that he's playing at too heavy of a weight. He needs to lose weight. There's no doubt about it. I hope the Bulls were smart enough to talk to him and his agent and say, listen, we got a four, we got a five, we need you to get minutes at the three. You've played about a quarter of your career there. We feel you can be a three. We feel you need to be a three because you can't carry that extra weight on two surgically repaired ACLs. So you need to play lighter. And I hope that's what he ends up doing. And I think he can be a three. I've always felt, you know, there was this kind of discussion around Nico Mirotic. Hey, what's Nico? Can he give you some minutes at the three? Nico is more of a four, closer to a five than a three. There's in the modern NBA, there's point guards, there's wings, and there's bigs. And there's guys that kind of straddle both. And Nico was like that. But I felt like the argument that Nico could give you minutes at the three, I think Parker can absolutely be more of a fit at the three than Nico Mirotic was. But a lot of those same people that were so in the camp of Nico Mirotic and worried about Lauri Markkanen's progression now that we're bringing on Parker, they never said a word when Nico was here. I think it's so incongruent, and I do feel that Parker can be a three if he loses weight, and I think that's where he has to be. I think that's where his career is left, because he can't hold the extra weight on those knees anymore.
Well, but that's also the issue with the short-term deal, Fred. You're signing the guy while he's overweight and expecting him to transform before the season starts. I don't think that's realistic. He's shown throughout his career that he has issues with his weight. It's almost put him out of the league at times. So,
but he's 23.
Well, I agree.
He's 23 years old.
The one-year deal is perfect. He's 23 years old, and his youth hasn't been kind to him. He's torn two ACLs in four NBA seasons. Yeah. You can't tell me his youth is on his side.
Well, you make that same argument against Sean. You make that same argument against Sean Livingston, and then Warriors don't pick him up. He had catastrophic injuries.
Did they pay him $20 million?
Well, for a year, it doesn't matter. It's not. If you have the space, what would you rather do? It's not our money. It's not like this is going to affect the 2019 plan. I'd rather have him spend it and take a flyer on him than just leave it there and hope that maybe some team will dump, just dump that for us, and then we'll get a future first-round pick. Pipe dream. Those pipe dreams are over. What we would end up getting is some baloney, two second-rounders. Pound sand on that. I don't play that game. That's ridiculous. And even I'll say a 16th or 17th, the odds of a guy in the second part of the first round being better than Jabari Parker are slim and none. Like, I feel he's got a better chance of coming back and being a better NBA player than some 16th or 17th pick overall, especially next year in a draft that sucks. I mean,
and that's the risk the Bulls are taking. They went boom or bust. He's either going to be their small forward of the future, or he's going to fit so horribly and suck so bad that they're going to lose even more games because they used all their cap on one player.
So it's a win-win.
It's a big-term liability.
So it's a win-win.
It is a win-win, but could have had draft assets on top of the worst-case scenario.
That's what I'm lost here at. I keep on hearing it. So that's where it comes down to. It's a win-win with Parker, right? Either he's great and we get him on another deal next year, or he sucks and we just cut him. We're back in 2019. Or this fake reality that's not even remotely true. Let's say
what do you mean it's not remotely true?
You would rather have the Denver deal?
You wanted to get into this trade. So let's go over what Atlanta, Brooklyn, and the Nuggets did. So for an order to the Nuggets to dump Fareed and Darrell Arthur onto the Nets had to clear more space. So prior to the Nuggets and Nets dealing, the Nets sent Jeremy Lin a 2025 second and a 2023 pick swap to Atlanta for Portland's 2022nd pick from Atlanta and the rights to Isaiah Cordonier, who's an overseas player.
Well,
after that happened, after they cleared the space, then the Nets took on Fareed, Darrell Arthur, a 2019 1-12 protected first and a 2022nd for Isaiah Whitehead, which he was waived. So the deals were there.
We were
$600,000 in cap short of that.
So let's just look at that one second. Everyone says the 2019 draft sucks. There aren't any players past 12 that are supposed to be real difference makers. And it's protected. So let's say that Denver keeps their pick. They suck for whatever reason. They keep the pick. What does that become?
It probably becomes, I don't know the stipulations on the pick they sent, but more than likely 1-10 or 1-12 protected the following year as well. Because of what happened to the Bulls with the Kings pick, a lot of teams aren't doing that turn into a second. They'll have it protected until they get that first, and that's all they'll agree to.
Yeah, again, if it's protected, I would see your point or seed your point if it was top 10. And, we've gone over this kind of and on the Bullseye quite a bit. That's where the stars, for the most part, are found, in the top 10 picks. If we're talking about second half of the first round picks, I think I'd rather take my chance. I think the odds are better Jabari Parker ends up being a better NBA player than whoever.
But you also have to incorporate the value of our own draft pick. Say Jabari does great the first half of the season and then his knee blows out again or he has an injury and he can't play. Now, once again, we're stuck in the middle, not going to make the playoffs, but we're going to be at the top end of the lottery outside of where the top end of the talent is, and we didn't take on an extra pick. So now we don't have two picks that we can trade up to get where we wanted to be, which obviously this year worked out fine. Wendell Carter Jr. fell in our lap, but there was also rumors the Bulls refused to trade the 22nd pick because they wanted Chandler Hutchison so bad, and now he's getting put on the back.
Rumors, exactly. I mean, I don't believe him. I mean, what rumors? If, again, for what? Trade the 22nd pick to move up and take Mo Bamba? I'm happy with 7 and 22.
No, Jaren Jackson would have been the pick at 4. But, yes, obviously that is all.
Rumors. Not
even true. Doesn't matter now.
Yeah. And honestly, I'd rather take, from what I've seen so far, I'd rather take Wendell Carter and Hutchinson. As much as I love Jackson, I'd rather have those two guys. I think Hutchinson has shown me enough to say, man, this kid's going to be a contributing player, a starter, and I don't think the delta between Jackson and Carter is going to be big enough.
And I can agree with you there, but you refuse to trade that pick to get this player that you promised that you wanted to then put him on the back burner before you even find out what's on your roster kind of is just contradicting. It's the opposite of what they said they were going to do going into the season. They said they were going to build around Lauri Markkanen, and instead of building around Lauri Markkanen, they went and they paid two 23-year-olds who think their own stuff doesn't stink, and they're going to dominate the ball.
Where do you get that from Jabari Parker? Like, why does he not think his own stuff doesn't stink as a number two overall pick? I don't see it.
Because he needed $20 million after two ACL injuries.
They had to pay him $20 million.
Two assists to 1.6 turnovers for his career.
Keith, they had to pay him
that ball over as much as he assists.
They had to pay him that much money so Milwaukee wouldn't match.
Yes, I'm aware of that. I get that. But
so what's the problem?
Dante Exum only got $11 million.
Yeah, because he never performed at a level that Jabari Parker did, and he wasn't the number two overall pick. I mean, there's a lot of reasons for that. And, I mean, are we actually going to compare Dante Exum's career so far, what he's done, to Jabari Parker? Jabari Parker averaged 20 points per game.
I don't think either of them have really done much for extended periods.
He averaged 20 points per game over 70 games.
And he's also averaged 46 games per season over 4 years.
Yes, agreed. I don't see – we're going to probably beat this – to a dead horse. A couple other topics I did want to talk about. So everybody's bringing up the two ACLs and you know, comparisons arose, you know, and I made the point on Twitter, and I'll say it again here, that Derek's athleticism is what separated him from everyone else. He was an uber athlete, just like Westbrook. If Westbrook loses that extra speed and extra pop, he's just like everybody else. So what happened to Derek and those injuries affected his athleticism. That cuts to the heart of what Derrick Rose was as a player. Jabari Parker's two ACLs, Jabari Parker was never an uber athlete. That wasn't what made him so special. He's highly skilled offensively. He shot 38% from three last year. That's exactly what this team needs. We need outside shooting. 38% from three, 50% almost from the field. He's a shooter and a scorer. And for whatever reason, we devalue that in Chicago. And it's like, insane to me.
We devalued it with Zach. I'm currently devaluing it with Jabari, mainly because we already have Zach. We had one ball stopper. Now we have two. Watching highlights from last year of Zach are great, and he can create and do a lot of great stuff for himself. But 75% of the time, Lowry is standing behind him all by himself with nobody there. Having two players like that concerns me.
If that's the issue, that's on the coach. You know what's a better, bigger concern for me is having a team that's not talented and having a team full of guys that can't score and attract attention when they're standing on the court. And God love David Nwaba, but nobody's going to pay anywhere near as much attention to him as they are to Jabari Parker in the offensive end. So that's on Fred. He's got to manage the minutes. All this stuff, all this worry about Lauri Markkanen, it's going to hinder Lauri Markkanen's progress. Let me tell you something. If Lauri can't handle the Bulls bringing in a 23-year-old with mega talent offensively, then he isn't the alpha I expect him to be.
Well, what do you want him to do? Run over to him and say, hey, quit with the ISO crap and give me the ball?
I get what you're saying.
It's on Fred. I think Fred is going to have a very hard time this year because he has two 23-year-olds coming off injuries. Zach
How did Giannis do it? How did he
but
do
Jabari's
it?
Jabari's trying to prove himself.
How did Giannis handle it with Jabari next to him then? I mean, this
Giannis became a point forward. If they're trying to make Lowry a point forward and putting Jabari at the power forward, maybe that'll work. I think Lowry might actually be more suited for the small forward than Jabari Parker is.
I said on Twitter, I'll say it again. If Lowry is negatively impacted by incoming talent, no matter how incongruent that talent may be, he isn't the alpha I thought he was. And let me just say, I think he's going to be fine. And I think the Bulls will be the biggest surprise in the NBA next year. And if Jabari Parker starts to fill anywhere near his potential as a second overall pick, and he steps in, you have a piece that you can either A, trade for assets at the trade deadline, if that's your plan, if you think he doesn't fit, or B, if he fits really well and this team ends up being an offensive powerhouse with three guys that can, you know, average 20 per game, then we've got another homer, and then we can just pick up that option next year. But
well, let me ask you this. What do you think you could get for Jabari Parker at the deadline on a $20 million contract without taking on
deal?
A Luol Deng, Ryan Anderson, Joakim Noah? That's the kind of contract you're going to have to take back in order to move that and still get something of value.
I think absolutely. I think if the Lakers are competing and they're doing well, I think in 1 second they would trade Luol Deng and Ingram, let's say, for Jabari Parker. You get out of that Luol Deng contract in year two. Let's say they're not even competing. Let's say they're around 500. Why wouldn't the Lakers take that deal? Salaries match, right? Pretty close. You can make it work. The Lakers, and I think that's even more likely scenario. Let's say the Lakers are hovering around 500. And Ingram, you know, maybe let's say he's injured or doesn't have a great year. I think that's entirely possible. That's a piece or an asset that I think you could trade. Even if he plays poorly, it's an expiring deal. So you could still do the same thing where you take on assets.
Yes, but it's a $20 million expiring deal, meaning you got to find somebody to match that. So that means you're going to take a horrible contract on, and likely it's going to be longer. And taking that contract on ruins free agency.
How's that any different from taking on a horrible
because
contract
Melo
with
the cap
space?
Because Melo would have changed this year and left availability for next year. You would have gotten extra asset. You literally would have been buying assets to send Melo someplace else and rid OKC of their problem.
Again.
That would have had nothing to do with next year. You would have developed organically, actually found out what the hell you had already, and then gone into free agency with a whole bunch of money and knowing exactly what you needed to feel.
Again, one deal made, protected up to 12. I think teams have finally realized how stupid it is just to give away first-round picks.
No, and I agree there. Pax said on, I believe it was ESPN 1000, prior to the Nets trade happening, he referenced the Sixers taking on Wilson Chandler and only getting a second. Granted, Wilson Chandler is actually a good player that Philadelphia wanted, so it worked out for both teams, and that's why they accepted a second. But, yes, it is much harder to find those kinds of deals at this time because the league is going young and having controlled contracts is the name of the game.
So not only is it much harder, it's just not there. That's my point. I'd rather have Jabari Parker than that deal that the Nets made. I'm 100% honest.
You'd also rather not dress like Kirk Heinrich, so I know why you want Jabari Parker over a draft pick down the road.
Well, isn't that part of the... Everything we're moving towards is a 2019 free agent marketplace, right? And I'm telling you, if we suck again and we got 27 wins or a lottery pick, we're not getting anybody in that free agency market. If we go out and we do...
And then you have extra assets for when you suck and the New Orleans Pelicans go, okay, we need to trade Anthony Davis now. Uh-huh. Then you have extra firsts and extra things to trade for Anthony Davis, who's probably the best possible free agent in the next two free agency periods.
Again, nobody's giving up those firsts. If you want Anthony Davis, maybe a better, more realistic scenario is Jabari Parker goes out and plays at an all-star level, averaging 20-7. Then you could trade Jabari Parker, who's only 24 years old, for an asset like that. Like, I think that's much more realistic than a second half first-round pick. You know.
Well, we're all assuming that Jabari can play the small forward, and he's going to play a full season, which he has never done in his career. So
he's played a quarter of
we'll
his career at the small forward position.
He has never played 80 games in a season.
But, okay. we can move Lowry. This is not rocket science anymore. This isn't 1980. These are positions you can shift around. Lowry can play some time at the five, and Jabari can play some time at the four.
We'll see how it works out, Fred. We have to wait. I'm skeptical at this point. You're optimistic. One of us is going to be right. One of us is going to be wrong. We got about 3 months to find out.
I don't think it's a question of who's going to be right or wrong. I think it's a question of, was this a dumb move by the Chicago Bulls? That's the question.
It can't be a dumb move because it can't bite him in the ass.
That's exactly right. And that's the end of the story. I mean, anybody who's like losing sleep or upset about this move for all these Fantasyland trades that were there for the Bulls, they weren't there. Why wouldn't any of these trades happened already?
Because Oklahoma City doesn't want to give anything up to just get rid of Melo.
For $100 million,
leverage game.
They don't have any say in
the waiving of Nwaba. Only made sense to make the money for the Melo deal work, and obviously they ended up giving all that money to Jabari, which I didn't think they were going to have to do.
Well, they had to do it in order to sign him, right?
Yes, I get that. They had to offer a crazy 1 year amount that the Bucks would pull the offer so they could get the team option instead of having to give him 2 years and non-guaranteed in the second with X amount of dollars.
I think it comes down to the only realistic deal that was out there was the Nets deal, and you feel that you would rather have a 13, 14, 15 number one pick, potentially.
Yes, I simply wanted to see what we had and what would grow organically without forcing a one-year, $20 million contract trying to get into the playoffs for ultimately no reason. The team, as constituted, had the potential to get there on their own, and now you just threw an extra monkey wrench in there, and you got to play Jabari a lot, which means Denzel's going to get less playing time.
Hold on, stop right there. No, you don't.
Hutchinson's going to get less playing time.
Hold on a second. No, you don't. Jabari Parker is not Boogie Cousins. He's one of the nicest kids in the world. And if he's not bringing it, and he doesn't show talent, and he doesn't play well, he's not going to play.
He was complaining in the playoffs in Milwaukee that he wasn't getting the ball or getting enough minutes.
Well, I think those were valid complaints. The teams, I didn't think Milwaukee was good, number one. Number two, when he did get those opportunities, I thought he had some really nice moments in the playoffs. I remember one game specifically where he scored 17, where he actually got the opportunity there. Milwaukee was a train wreck, coaching-wise, a horribly coached team. And, you know, I'm not going to judge Jabari Parker based on what the morons who run the Milwaukee Bucks decided. Now they got actually a good coach in Budenholzer. But my point is, we don't have to play him. You think it's going to cause a major issue if he doesn't play? Number one, those issues usually solve themselves. There's not a season that goes by where we don't have an injury to somebody.
I think when you pay Jabari Parker $20 million when Bobby Portis is up for a contract extension, that you're bringing in somebody that plays the power forward that says
he's a
Bobby's
three.
On the way
he's
out.
He's already playing the three. I think that message has been sent. You're going to be playing the three, not the four. Bobby Portis is a five in today's modern-day NBA. Like, this does not seem hard to me. Like, the minutes should be divided up there. Valentine's a one and a two.
And we'll see. This all hinders on Jabari getting in shape, staying healthy, and being able to play the small forward.
And at 23, I think that's hopefully what's going to happen. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, when it gets all said and done, you made a great point of why you thought that was a good deal, why it was a bad deal, that you would rather have, you know, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, somewhere in there, that Denver pick. That was the only option that we saw that was traded. The only one. I would counter and say, I have seen few players that are as talented offensively as Jabari Parker. I absolutely love the kid coming out of Duke. Now, two ACLs obviously will give anyone pause. But he's 23. You hope that he's healed. And he's a player that wasn't dependent on athleticism. He's dependent on offensive skill, which doesn't go away with a torn ACL. I hope he loses weight. I hope he plays his guts out. And he's going to be incentivized to do that at 23.
Oh, no. And on that facet, I agree. He's coming to his hometown. He has every reason not to, slack off. He wants to be here. And I think that he could. But my skepticism tells me, I don't think he's a small forward, and until proven otherwise, I'm just not going to put my blind faith in that.
Fair enough. Fair enough, Keith. All right, when we disagree, it's always probably more entertaining, I would say, than we're just nodding heads. So on this case, and obviously with Mo Bamba, we both disagreed. I think, obviously, I'm going to end up right on both of these cases, but we shall see. We shall see. One final thing before I've already hit my limit here. I got to ask you one final question about the Zach LaVine contract. Let's give your overall. Now, a week later, you know, what's your take on that whole deal?
My max was 18. That was kind of my comfort zone. I had even mentioned going up to 20 would give me pause, and I feel like the Kings just duped us into it. You know, they knew that we valued Zach too much. They knew that they could potentially take us out of the cap dump race by giving Zach an inflated contract that was just inflated enough to potentially give the Bulls pause, but they knew would match. But I do think it was the right move. Letting Zach walk probably would have been more painful than paying Zach 19.5, when in the next 2 years it'll be less than 15% of total cap space.
I agree 100%. You know, I was before, I was much more, you know, I got in a couple arguments on Twitter. Hey, if we can get Marcus Smart from 10 to 15, I'd rather have that, right? And you know, in retrospect, after sitting on it a little bit longer, thinking about it, you just can't let a guy that skilled and that young walk away for nothing. You're paying a little bit more than you wanted. Big picture, I still think he's very tradable. If he ends up living up to his ability and skill, we're all going to be very, very happy.
I don't know. If he lives up to his ability and skill on that contract in 2 years, he's going to be a steal. His contract will look something like Kemba Walker's looks like right now at $12 million, and close to 12% of his team's salary.
Yeah, I think the Bulls right now are one of the few teams in the league. Well, first of all, they have as much young talent, you know, 24, 25 and under, as anyone in the league, more so than most teams. And number two, they have the potential to have, I think, three guys that can average 20 points a game in Markkanen, LaVine, and now, you know, Jabari Parker, all under contract next year. I am really excited to see what this team can do offensively. Now, Dunn's going to have to play out of his mind on the defensive end.
Dunn and Wendell are going to be hurting after every game. That's
yeah, exactly. Wendell Carter's got to play, show the defensive skills that he's shown us in Summer League. And I think Markkanen's a little underrated defensively. I don't think he's ever going to be, you know, world beater, but I don't think he's terrible. And Lopez is rock solid defensively. So it's an interesting balance of players. But you're right. Fred's going to have to coach his rear end off. But in this collection of talent, I firmly believe we have at least 44 to 47 wins. And in doing so, we will create a situation that will attract, potentially, a couple of those players out of Golden State where they may not be happy with the salary they'll be paid. Because there's no way Golden State's going to pay, you know, $200, $300 million in luxury tax. What say you?
I say billionaires like being better than other people, and most of them spend their money to flaunt that they're better than other people. I would not put it past Golden State to put every penny worth of tax into retaining their dynasty. And I also wouldn't put it past Clay. Maybe Draymond will be a little harder because he's got a bit of an ego, but Clay seems like the kind of guy that he just likes winning. He's comfortable in his situation, and he'd take a pay cut to keep winning.
His brother, Clay Thompson's brother, plays for the White Sox. Kevin Durant was in Chicago this weekend. One of those two are the two guys I want. I don't want Draymond Green. I want one of those two, Durant or Thompson, and they're only coming if we're a 44 to 47 win team. So let's make it happen. Let's make the miracle. And in 2020, I mean, we're going to be right there with anyone else. So.
And then in 2020, we're adding AD to KD, right? And then we're just going to tear everybody up.
We'll see. We'll see. I just want this group. I think this group is going to be exciting this year.
No, it'll be fun to watch. Whether they make it or break it in the process is to be determined. But with all the potential on the roster, that is one thing that cannot be disputed. It will be a fun season of basketball to watch.
Keith, you always bring the goods. Even if I disagree with you, you made a great argument, as good as anyone could possibly do it, just as good as our friend from Australia, anyone else out there that is, you know, often wrong. In this situation, you're usually right, but these last two, you're wrong. But we'll see what happens, my man. We'll see what happens. I'm looking forward. And any way you look at it, it's going to be a fun next year. No doubt about it from here going forward. I think you'd agree.
Yes, I agree, and we don't have to actually root for losses. We can tolerate them,
I just
but
tell
we
you.
Don't have to root for them anymore.
Thank
so that,
God
that
we,
is a positive.
Thank God we didn't draft Mo Bamba. I don't know if we could do this, man. If every week we'd have to analyze Mo Bamba's play. There's no way I'd be able to take it. Did you see him get manhandled by in the what game was against the Suns?
With yes, with Ayton.
Oh my God! Oh my Lord!
Have you seen Knox? Have you seen that?
Yeah. To your credit, that guy has looked fantastic, and I've got a couple good Knicks fans, and I mentioned that you know you've been talking about Knox for 6 months, so. It definitely, he looks fantastic and looks exciting, and I'm happy for the Knicks fans because they've suffered quite a bit. I'm actually not happy for him, but I mean, hey.
It's killing me. They literally drafted Knox and Mitchell Robinson were two names that I wanted the Bulls to get, and
yeah.
Robinson's looking like a steal despite his character issues, and Knox is showing the athleticism that he wasn't able to show in Kentucky. So.
No doubt. Well, it'll be good to see what they do, but I still like our team over the Knicks. And I think we're going to really make some noise next year. So it'll be fun talking about it, my man.
Sounds good, Bess.
Take it easy, Keith. Have a good one, brother. Have a great weekend.